When history is taught, shouldn't all of it be taught? That's a question being debated in Arizona and in Texas. I'm Norma Martinez with Texas Public Radio, and this is Fronteras, a public radio show about issues along the U.S.-Mexico border and changing demographics in the Southwest. A U.S. district judge is expected to rule soon on the constitutionality of Arizona's ban on teaching Mexican-American studies in public schools. In 2010, a group of Republican state lawmakers there argued that the classes created resentments towards other races and even in some cases promoted the overthrow of the U.S. government. Here in Texas, though, educators are working to teach public school students about Hispanics' often overlooked role in shaping American history. I sat down to discuss the issue with Marco Cervantes, director of the Mexican-American Studies Program at the University of Texas at San Antonio, and Liliana Saldana, associate professor in bicultural bilingual studies at the UTSA College of Education and Human Development. In Texas, there was a push some years ago to get Mexican-American studies implemented in public schools, but I believe it was in 2014 that the legislature said that schools can allow Mexican-American studies on a voluntary basis. It was more of an elective.
Yeah, that's correct.
So what can you tell us if there was any sort of similar type of pushback in the legislature that happened before in Arizona?
Yeah, some of the State Board of Education members felt that ethnic studies in general was still very anti-American. You have State Board members who were actually very much against the idea of multicultural education. Mm. You had members who didn't believe in the idea of ethnic studies, that students should be just learning, quote-unquote, American history, which to us is a version of history that excludes the experiences of people of color in this country. And so there was a lot of pushback for high school requirement for ethnic studies.
Well, it could also be easily argued that here in Texas, the history of Texas would not be possible without the participation of what was going on south of the border, the Tejanos and everybody who were participating in the history of Texas. So when Texas history is taught in schools, is it considered an elective course? And if not, is the story of the Tejanos and of the Mexicans who are part of the history of Texas included in the studies?
If you grew up in Texas, you had to take a Texas history course. And, from my own experience, I only learned, the Anglo side of history, And so it was a version that often omitted Mexicans or that vilified Mexicans as the enemy, as the foreigner. And so, a Mexican-American studies perspective, right, in Texas history would allow for various perspectives for a more amplified examination of ethnic race relations in the making of Texas. And so we believe that Mexican-American studies provides a venue for examining multiple perspectives, for honoring the voices that have been omitted, for ensuring that there are that history is more inclusive of the Tejano experience, because even then today it's very, very marginalized in the current textbooks.
I have the same history. I grew up in Houston, so taking Texas history in 7th and 8th grade, got a very narrow view of what Texas history, was about. Very Eurocentric, very celebratory of hero figures like, Davy Crockett, Travis, and such. I think that I needed it. I think that it affected me. It affected how I viewed myself, my confidence, and when I did start really becoming engaged in African-American, Mexican-American literature, in at the university level, that's when I really started to figure out, wow, like this was a history that was denied, that was denied for me. Yet, as you said, it's such a big part of Texas history. Like, why wasn't it there? And I see that this continues with our students. We teach entry level, freshman, freshman level courses. And we have conversations with our students at the beginning of the semester, usually to find out what they're bringing to class, the knowledge is the lived experiences that they're bringing, but also what types of education they got in terms of Mexican American studies, and it's usually very limited to like Cesar Chavez, like one name. That's kind of, that's it, you know, not the contributions of the many Chicanas and Chicanos of the 30s, the 40s, the 50s, civil rights cases, you know, World War II vets, the richness of the Chicano movement and what that brought. A lot of my students think Chicano is a bad word, you know, and that, I think we have a lot of work to do if our youth are scared of the word Chicano, rather than seeing it as a word of empowerment. I mean, so many of our ancestors and elders that came before us worked hard to push towards including us in the society. So I think that education is a really big, important part of this.
But the source of the education also has come into question, because I know that last year in the legislature, there was only one book submitted as a textbook for high schools. And I think it was called Mexican American Heritage.
Mm, that's great. Yeah.
And it was published by non-Hispanic publishers. And I know that there were a lot of stereotypes that were very controversial, like introducing the concept of the lazy Mexican, and that Mexicans were not reared to work a full day's work, and that's why the industrialists were so successful.
Yeah,
the book was very, very problematic. There were things in that book that were just straight up, you know, not factual. There were also omissions. There were also historical distortions. And so it was not just a matter of it just being incorrect. I mean, it was also a pretty racist textbook. When you look at some of the ideas that were presented in the book about indigenous peoples not being advanced or being as civilized as Europeans, Mexican immigrants being a threat to the United States and being criminals, and of course the 20th century workers, right, who are of Mexican origin, who were lazy compared to their white counterparts. So, I mean, this is not the kind of literature that we want students to be reading, you know, Mexican or non-Mexican. It's just not the kind of book that we need in our classrooms. Yeah.
Well, we've talked about some of the pushback in the legislature, but in the schools and the administration, have you had any conflicts with them as far as proposing bringing Mexican American studies to the schools?
Not necessarily direct conflict. I think right now it's been challenging to get school districts and superintendents and principals to sort of jump into the whole, you know, Mexican American studies, because there isn't a lot of knowledge on the benefits of Mexican American studies still in public, right, in the community. In academia, we've seen the benefits of Mexican American studies, you know, working with our students at the university. Mm-hmm. We know that from the case in Arizona that there are tremendous benefits to ethnic studies, specifically Mexican American studies. But we do have community support, but we need to create stronger partnerships with schools, with you know, our teachers, our principals, our curriculum specialist, our curriculum developmental specialist, and everyone who works in the school district, the superintendents. What we see is, for example, in San Antonio, we have 16 school districts, and out of the 16 school districts and the many schools that are a part of those districts, we only have two schools that are offering Mexican American studies. Stevens High School, we have Andres Lopez, who teaches a course in Mexican American literature, and we also have KIPP Academy, and they're teaching a dual credit course with Palo Alto College, and they're teaching the Mexican American Fine Arts and Appreciation class. So it's an exciting time, because we are really building from the ground up. And this is really a vision that comes from the 1960s. I mean, this is, you know, the idea of Chicana and Chicano studies, the idea of being able to teach our history and our culture, right? And to teach about the Mexican-American experience from an interdisciplinary perspective, from the perspective of the people in our community, has been a vision that is long overdue in terms of implementing it in our community and in our schools.
That was Marco Cervantes, who directs the University of Texas at San Antonio's Mexican American Studies program, and Liliana Saldana, associate professor in bicultural bilingual studies at the university. Now to Austin, where an unusual incident took place at a new downtown bar on July 28th. Members of a DJ group made up of Latino women say the bar shut down the set they'd been hired to play. But as KUT's Ashley Lopez reports, it's also brought up a complicated issue in Austin, and that's the city's relationship with the Latino community.
The Tulitha Vinyl Club had a gig at a new bar downtown. The group describes itself as an all-girl, all-vinyl club for self-identifying women of color. They had accepted a Friday night gig at a bar called Caroline. It opened in the Aloft Hotel just the day before. The group was supposed to open and close for a band called Superfónicos. I'll let Claudia Aparicio Gamundi, one of the members of Tulitha Vinyl Club, take the story from here.
So we played for 2 hours. We did a whole medley of different sounds. It went from hip-hop to all the killers and the $100 billers to Motown. I don't like you, but I love you. Funk. Disco. I mean, it started building up to Superfónicos. We really loved them, and so we curated the set very well as far as, like, the transition.
The band played for about an hour and a half. And then it was back to Tulitha Vinyl Club.
I mean, after Superfónicos, everybody was ready to dance. Started moving tables, dancing to our music, and then that's when we started playing salsa, cumbia. I mean, there was some Selena, there was some Broad City, Latino and Proud. Say it loud, I'm Latino and Proud. Don't stop the body round. There was a lot of that, so I guess they weren't expecting it for some reason. We literally had either 10 minutes or close to 10 minutes to end.
That's when a manager came up and asked, who's in charge of the music?
And I said, we all are, what's up? And then he just said, this hotel does not play Latin music, you need to shut it off.
Other members of the Tulitha Vinyl Club, Jennifer Rother and Alejandra Gonzalez, say they were told the gig was over.
It happened very fast. I mean, this interaction was just like this, and I think we're all in shock. As it happened, we were just like,
what the hell is going on? Like, you know,
it was like he says we don't play Latin music, and then he like goes away.
Gonzalez says they were told, quote, the vibe was too low. She says she still isn't entirely sure what that meant. I called the general manager at Caroline, a man named David Meisner, and asked him to talk about what happened. Meisner sent a written statement. I'm going to skip to the part where he explains why they asked Tulitha Vinyl Club to stop playing. He said, quote, the request was not about the genre of music. It was about tempo. But we did not communicate or handle the situation appropriately on our end, end quote. Meisner also said he's retraining his team to create a more inclusive and respectful environment. Tulitha Vinyl Club's Alejandra Gonzalez and Yesenia Giron say they are not angry that the venue didn't like their music or their music's tempo, though.
We're mad because you said you don't play Latin music here, and you have a Latin funk band and Tulitha Vinyl Club that you booked.
Like, if it was really about the vibe, if you wanted to switch the vibe, then... there were other ways that we could have been approached.
The women of Tulitha Vinyl Club say they personally felt embarrassed, used, and disrespected that night. But they say the worst part is that their culture was also disrespected. Yesenia Giron and Claudia Aparicio Gamundi say in a city like Austin, where Latino culture is big business, this happens too often.
So that goes hand in hand, feeling like we're always being dismissed and our culture is always being used, but we're not being accepted.
Yeah, it's like you want your tacos and you want your expensive margaritas and mezcal, but you don't want the people that come with it.
They say this is a common sentiment among Latinos here in Austin. That's especially true in the Mexican-American community, says Dr. Laura Hernandez-Arizman. She's an assistant professor at St. Edward's University here in Austin.
There's a very long history of this problem. The appropriation of particular components of, you know, particularly Mexican American culture and sort of commodifying them and sort of disregarding the people themselves.
Hernandez-Arizman says that as Austin's star has continued to rise nationally and internationally even, the Latino community hasn't felt it as much.
Even though there have been a number of, you know, successful Latinx-owned restaurants, you know, taco places and things in Austin, they get sort of overshadowed.
She says there's also a lot of outsiders moving in and opening businesses that are geared mostly to wealthier white communities. Couple this with gentrification, which is forcing out a lot of minorities. And she says it's easy to see how something like what happened to the Chulita Vinyl Club hit a nerve. Hernandez-Erzman says city leaders can help ease resentment. She says there are some that want to do something, but it won't be easy.
So I think in some ways they're moving in a positive direction. But I also think that, you know, these are challenging forces to confront, you know, and the level of city government, there are only so many tools that those leaders have.
Hernandez-Erzman says she's pretty impressed with the Chulita Vinyl Club, and she's happy what happened is getting so much attention. Like she said, it's not a new problem, but the fact that this group of women stood up and said something is progress. Yesenia Giron from Chulita Vinyl Club hopes it sends a message.
And that it also encourages other people to speak out against things of this nature, because so many times we grow accustomed to it and we don't say anything, but I think we should say something. Hola,
amigos. For Fronteras, I'm Ashley Lopez in Austin. In authentic
Latin beat. Coming up on Fronteras, how art is changing perceptions of life on the border when we come back. I'm Norma Martinez with Texas Public Radio. Welcome back to Fronteras. Drugs, immigration, and gangs. That's much of what we hear about the Texas-Mexico border. A couple of North Texas artists are hoping to change that through their art. KERA's Hadi Mawagdi has their story.
Naturally dyed cloth, woven nets, cactus skeletons, and hog guts. Those are just a few of the materials that fiber artists Sarita Westrup and Annalise Mijares work with. They create stone simple, hand-woven sculptures and installations inspired by the region.
We think a lot about ideas of landscape, identity, and bicultural aesthetics on the border.
That's Westrup, who lives in Oak Cliff. She and Mijares have been creative partners for 3 years. They create work that pushes against the expectations of art from the borderland. They don't want to be told what is or what isn't Chicana art.
We work to provide something that you didn't notice, to show this nuance, this layered idea of what a Mexican-American region can be like.
Together, they work under the moniker Tierra Firme, which translates as solid ground. The pair has woven tapestries made from donated national park uniforms, tapestries featuring landscapes from West Texas. They've produced map-like installations of the land along the Rio Grande using spices, dirt, rocks, and macrame. Most recently, they've fabricated artificial portals that audiences walk through. The portals recreate a migrant's path to America. Mijares, who lives in Denton, says there's more to life on the border than narcos and the wall.
We're also very interested in celebrating this region. For us, it's not a negative, it's more than a positive. It gives you an experience where your perspective is wide.
Mijares is from El Paso. Westrup's from the other end of the border, nearly 800 miles away in McAllen. Geographically, the cities are vastly different. El Paso's an arid desert with mountains. McAllen? Not so much.
We have palm tree oases mixed with cactus, mixed with bougainvilleas, plumerias. So there's this like tropical colors and flowers right next to desert.
One of the things these communities share with the artists that they've bred is a dual identity. They are Mexican and American. Mijares says that duality is key to their art.
We like to have two perspectives in Tierra Firme because we are showcasing a perspective that's shared of the border region, not just like my border or Sarah's border.
They understand that their individual perspectives don't represent the masses.
There are a lot of different types of Mexicans a lot of different types of Mexican Americans. What looks authentic to one could not be authentic to somebody else, because each person's experience is different. As we work, we keep that in mind.
Westrup and Mijares aren't only visual artists. They're educators.
So I'm going to show you guys how to make an ink, and then Annalise is going.
We value education. That's how you learn about culture. And so we're teaching you an art technique, but we have a conceptual lesson as well, and it always pulls back to the border.
They've taught everywhere, from El Paso to North Carolina. Mijares' specialties are net making, using plants to create inks for watercolors, and macrame. Westrup teaches basketry, twining, and weaving.
I teach surface design with natural dyes, and I really like to focus on the Oaxacan tradition of using marigold flowers, cochineal, and indigo to create the rainbow.
These two daughters of the border met in Denton at the University of North Texas, and they've put down roots in DFW, which has allowed them to become a name in the North Texas art scene. But for each of them, the border will always be solid ground. For Fronteras, I'm Hadi Mawagdi.
And that's it for Fronteras and our stories from the Southwest this week. You can find the show under the Programs tab on our website, tpr.org. Alexis Yancey produced this broadcast. Michelle Dubac is our executive producer. Charanga Cakewalk composed our theme music. Thanks for joining us. I'm Norma Martinez with Texas Public Radio in San Antonio.